More than 125,000 people welcomed into Ireland under a system that was designed to be temporary. Tens of thousands of Ukrainian people housed in hotels and guest houses, spare rooms, a patchwork response to an emergency. And now, quietly but apparently decisively, the state is starting to pull that system back. Payments cut, contracts ending, a long-term phase-out underway. But if this was always intended to be temporary, why does it now look like a permanent refugee housing industry has taken root? It's News Talk Daily, I'm Ciara Doherty. And the government says it wants to wind down accommodation supports for Ukrainians, moving people towards independent living, they say, and returning hotels and homes back to the wider housing market. But behind that shift is a much bigger story about how Ireland actually responded in the first place to the refugee crisis created by the Russian invasion of Ukraine and what that response has now become. And look, I know we've discussed it here on News Talk Daily before, billions and billions of euro in public and a heavy reliance on private providers, making some of those extremely rich in the process. And growing questions about whether the state has built something it now can't easily dismantle. So what happens next? For the people living in the system and for the businesses and indeed the individuals who are built around it and for a housing market already under pressure? Well, with me today is Niall Sargent, current affairs correspondent with The Currency, who I think it's true to say knows more about the provision of refugee and asylum accommodation than pretty much anyone else in the country. What a title, Niall. What a thing to say about a person.
Yeah, it's been fun. That's one way to put it, to look through all this data and figure out where payments are going, who's making it.
You're very, very welcome back to News Talk Daily. As I said, we did discuss this issue in some detail back last year, back in August, but we've returned to it today because of this big announcement by the junior minister last week. And he promised that there was going to be a major reform of this area, whether it was those who provide accommodation through a spare room in their house, through their holiday home, up to the major private accommodation providers. Can you, I suppose, start by looking at that announcement at a basic level and tell me what it is they say that they're going to do?
Yeah, so this is what they call an orderly wind down of the state-funded accommodation for Ukrainians, the accommodation recognition payment. It's essentially, it's a tax-free payment for households who are hosting, households or hotels or small B&Bs, that sort of thing, hosting Ukrainian individuals or Ukrainian families. On the number side, at the end of February, it was about 42,000 Ukrainians across 23,500 properties. And the payments in total for that area is about 14.5 million per month. That's what the state was providing. So now in this part of this orderly wind down, there will be changes. First, it is at the moment been extended one more year to March 2027. That's in line with an EU directive which is set to run out at that time period. That may be extended, we don't know, but for now it's going to be extended for one more year. So it gives hosts information to know, okay, this is winding down. It's unlikely to continue past the next year.
Now, to be clear, it was meant to wind down this month.
Yes, but then the EU directive itself was extended, so in line the same. So there's a possibility there, but at the moment it's an orderly wind down in that sense. The payments are going down from 600 per month per household to 400, and there's going to be stricter rules for anyone who might be thinking of entering this year. So with the Residential Tenancies Board, if you're registered after 2022, you basically can't get into the system because the idea is they don't want new properties going towards the system because of the rental crisis and the housing crisis we have. So it's a fairly significant changes that are coming. There has been quite a sharp fall off in the number in the last year or so of people coming. So that's one part of it as well. But I think the government are also doing this because they're seeing other EU countries cutting their funding as well. So it's in tandem with that. And then, as you said, the wider issue, they do want to get particularly hotels and B&Bs back to tourism. Student accommodation is used as well. And then the rental and housing crisis, they do want rooms and houses or properties themselves being put back into the open market.
Interesting. OK, let's listen to the Minister of State for Migration, Colin Brophy, speaking in the Dáil about this last week.
As of the 13th of March 2026, over 125,700 people have fled Ukraine and received temporary protection. Of those, over 94,300 have requested and been provided access to state-supported accommodation. Almost 19,200 people are currently in state-contracted accommodation, and this is a significant and welcome reduction from a peak, which was, believe it or not, of 60,000 people in November 23. All accommodation contracts by my department are temporary in nature. Approximately 531 contracts are in operation. Our current contracted accommodation capacity is approximately 22,450 beds. It includes, obviously, hotels, guest houses, B&Bs. In sourcing and securing accommodation, the central consideration is the safety and security of the displaced people fleeing the war in Ukraine. And in 2024, approximately 420 contracts, and in 2025, 195 contracts were able to be terminated in terms of changes which we're making and the reduction in numbers. So far in 2026, 25 contracts have actually been terminated, and we have got three notices from providers for terminating of contracts.
Okay, so that's the minister there, really, I suppose, putting detail, a lot of detail on their efforts to phase out support for accommodation for Ukrainians in this country. But you have a really interesting story in The Currency now, which I think really sheds even more light about how complicated it is to dismantle all the structures that are in place here. Back in 2024, right, back around April 2024, we will remember, I remember clearly covering it on The Tonight Show at the time, the system was creaking under the pressure. The Department of Children, as it was in the time that was looking after this area, were basically did a call out to anybody in the country who had anything that could be repurposed to provide accommodation. They basically said, look, come to us. We're interested. There's lucrative contracts on offer here, folks. Let's talk.
Yeah, very lucrative contracts potentially in place. Government got reaction again, smaller B&Bs, individuals going forward, but they were really looking for larger scale properties. So not necessarily big hotel chains, they already had a lot of that, but big office blocks or commercial properties, warehouses that could be converted over. So they got a lot of interest from individuals, a lot of businesses putting forward properties where, you know, maybe they had longer term plans, but the short term potential profits that could be driven by this because they knew the payments are very generous. They could make some money in the short term off of that. So the government accepted, the department accepted many offers. A lot of these properties were then renovated. Millions put in by companies in some cases. Many of them had agreements in place, essentially a refurbishment agreement that once it's met, we will then enter into an accommodation agreement with you.
Because clearly, if you have a big office block, it's not suitable to house accommodation. So you need to put in dorms, beds, bathrooms, kitchen facilities, cooking facilities, all that sort of stuff.
All those things. And there was millions spent by several companies. Then last summer, this system transferred over to the Department of Justice. And with that changeover, there was a decision that we need to actually tighten up here on how much we're spending. There was somewhat of a fall off of demand coming through the international protection system. So this is for refugees from Ukraine, but also from, you know, other countries as well, and the wider international protection system. There was a bit of a fall off. There's obviously a lot of pressure on the government from the amount of money that has been spent with private providers. So the decision was made, okay, we might not need all of these properties. And the Minister for Justice, Jim O'Callaghan, said, well, let's find a way that see if we are required to continue with these. They decided not to go ahead with several of the contracts. And of course, companies who've put millions into refurbishment were not happy. They tried to resolve this outside of the court system, but I think nine cases have gone forward to the courts. One was recently settled. Another is about to be settled. And there's a few more in the mediation process. But in total, like there's a lot of money on the line here. I think one of the companies was claiming for around 17 million, another 14 million, another five or six. So there's quite a bit of money. We don't know the figures on the settlements, but there are provisions being made in the department's budget for the year going ahead for that. So there's obviously a lot of money that's going to be paid. In the long term, Jim O'Callaghan says they will save money by not going ahead with the contracts. But it's not a good look, let's say, for the department.
It's not a great way to save money.
No.
Is it?
No.
I mean, and I do think it just speaks to how ad hoc the whole system was, how haphazard. It always did feel chaotic. They always felt like they were on the back foot, and maybe that's just because they were. But this is extremely costly. And as you say, we don't know what these settlements are worth because settlements are confidential. The Department of Justice won't tell you how much they've set aside for these settlements. But you just look at some of the claims that are there from these nine proceedings that are underway, and you get a sense. We are talking, I don't know, 100 million euro, conservatively? Yeah, I don't know, I just pulled that out of the sky, to be honest. But
I'd say it's definitely, if you're looking at those claims, 15 million, 10 million, 8 million here or there. There's early cases as well, probably going to go through the system. Just last week, I just saw it this morning, the legal filing, a hotel in the south of Ireland that hosts Ukrainian families have taken a legal case now against the Minister of Justice. So there are potential for more cases to be coming there out of this process.
Well, see, that's, I suppose, the ugliness of all of this, isn't it? Because you put these lucrative contracts on the table, people willingly signed up to these contracts. You have a B&B or a guest house or indeed a hotel. You've used it now for the last couple of years to provide this accommodation. That contract is gone. How easy is it to revert to what that business was before? What's happened to all your custom? What's happened to all your trade? Now, many of, I think, will argue, well, that's the risk that you took and you did probably damn well out of it. But it does, I suppose, give a sense that a lot of these could end up before the courts.
Yeah.
And that's the dismantling part that's difficult.
I suspect there's definitely going to be more cases. So, and it just adds to the whole, like you said, the controversy about the whole privatized model that we've implemented, because people who are coming here from the Ukraine or elsewhere, the vast majority are coming here for very justifiable reasons. But the system itself, because it's set up in a very privatized system, you've got 6.3 billion paid out to private providers since 2020 alone.
6.3 billion spent.
But most of it actually spent since 2022.
The thing about a lot of these companies is that it was very concentrated, wasn't it, on a small number of individuals. And a lot of them, they have quite complex structures with offshore links. So it's actually quite difficult at times to even identify who the beneficiary of the money is.
Yeah, I think for my sins, I spent a few months looking through, God, I don't know how many lines and sheets of Excel spreadsheets trying to put together all of the payments. But we basically managed to figure out there's a lot of companies who get the payments, but many of them are actually grouped together in structures, networks, companies together with a specific parent company. So we found the top 15 ultimate beneficiaries received like 2.2 billion. So a third of those overall payments are essentially going to just 15 groups. We found, I think, companies or groups that were taking in over a billion have some element of offshore structuring, whether it is through a director or a shareholder having a trust, a family trust, or some offshore ownership, many of it legitimate for investment purposes. You know, you do have an offshore vehicle to make it easier to take in investment from outside. But with some of the groups, really, we just ended up in rabbit holes of offshore entities and companies, and we have no idea who the true beneficial owner are. That's, I think, a difficult one for the government or the Department of Justice now to kind of defend, in the sense of they will say, well, we have information on the Irish companies. We know who the directors and shareholders are of the Irish companies we're paying. But when the ultimate beneficiary is offshore and we don't really know who it's going to, because you go through multiple Jersey or Isle of Man companies and you come to a dead end, I think there's legitimate questions there when that's a lot of state money and taxpayer money that's going into this.
Now, those companies, most of them will state, look, we are tax compliant here in Ireland. But as you say, the offshore structures just really limit transparency. That's, I suppose, the big difficulty here. One of the most, I suppose, controversial elements of all of this, I think the element that generated the most pushback was local hotels, particularly in small regional towns and villages in Ireland being taken over and being used to provide accommodation. You know, there was a lot of opposition from local residents, but those hotels have been central to this system from the start. The government repeatedly has said over the years, look, we're going to move away from this model. Is there evidence that that is actually happening?
It is definitely happening to an extent. I mean, I think what Colin Brophy said is true. There has been a drop off in contracts, particularly with the smaller to medium-sized hotels in rural areas.
And have they gone back to being hotels in rural areas?
Several of them have gone back to being hotels, or some have gone back to having a mix. So they'll have some refugee accommodation and some open for the public in different parts of the hotel. So there is a bit of a shift back. I think it's more on the larger hotel sides where there still is a continuation of state contracts. I think a reason for that is most of them will be in Dublin or within towns or other towns or cities. They can take in several hundred up to, you know, low thousands, some of these hotels. So you can have a good concentration of people in one place, resources normally around. And there's reliability because they're big name hotel chains in many cases. So they have a good reputation. They have the staffing that would be required. So there seems to be a continuation in the payments there. Just two large hotel chains just filed what would be called Section 5 planning applications. It's essentially to confirm you have an exemption from normal planning rules. There isn't exemptions for refugee accommodation for hotels.
Which raised the ire of a lot of people.
Yes. That's been another issue entirely. But in this case, the Department of Justice now essentially, if they're going to extend your contract, they first want confirmation from the local authority. You don't need planning. So that's an indication those two hotels are getting continued contracts. And those are for over about 1,000 people, I think, combined for the two. So the larger side, it's continuing. But I think you are seeing in rural areas a fall off in the smaller hotel chains. A lot of that is coming back to issues that have been going on in local areas, protests, other things about the loss of tourist accommodation that a lot of towns and villages, especially in the south and southwest, rely on. So there's justifiable reasons why people would feel they want their local accommodation back for this. And I think asking legitimate questions of why has the state not built out its own purpose-built accommodation.
And there have been very, very, very slow moves in that direction. We obviously had this purchase of City West for about 148 million. But other than that?
There's a few in the pipelines now. There's more money set aside in the budget for this year to go towards potentially building more accommodation. The state have told us that they're looking at maybe turnkey properties, maybe themselves taking on large office blocks for either rental or purchasing. But they're nowhere near where they need to be. The direct provision system started over 20 years ago. Obviously, they would have probably bought some properties back then. There were issues at the time when the crash came. Properties weren't being used, were sold on. But the Catherine Day report about the direct provision system is 2020, I think that was. And okay, that's not a massive period of time, 6 years. But the focus there was moving away from for-profit hotels and building state accommodation. Because the state is so far behind and because the numbers have increased in coming in, it's very difficult. But the question has to be asked longer term. Why have we allowed ourselves to enter into this situation now? Because all the controversy around the system really comes from that. That's the crux of it.
But there is a broader, I suppose, housing angle here, isn't there? Niall, I mean, to what extent has this system of support and those structures that are in place for Ukrainian refugees affected and perhaps even protected the wider rental market? And what happens now?
That is the one to look out for, because that's the smaller system. Those payments are for small B&Bs, but also, like you said, a lot of individuals who are giving up a room. It might be a second home they have, or, you know, another part of the property. As the state is getting rid of the bigger contracts with the hotel providers and others, that's going to be a lot of people entering the system. And you've actually, in the last year, while Colin Brophy is right that on the contract side, it's really reduced, there's actually been an increase in the number of Ukrainians who are going then and living in, say, a room in someone's home or taking a certain part of the property. If those numbers are going to keep increasing into that system,
moving from those big private accommodations to the smaller accommodations, it's been wound down too.
Yes.
People got to go somewhere.
There's going to be an impact. And if you just look at the warnings from the Immigration Council of Ireland, or other NGOs and organizations are warning that this is going to be a big issue, especially as the state is also shifting from when you arrive in Ireland, it was 90 days that you would get a place in state accommodation. Now it's going down to 30 days. That's obviously going to push people more quickly into that rental market. And you already have Dublin City Council warning from the international protection side of it that there are people who are going out of the IPAS system and directly going into homelessness. So you're going to have a big issue there going forward. And then, of course, with the stresses on the rental market, that's going to be one to really look out for. I certainly don't have an answer. I don't think the government really have an answer for this.
Well, what's so interesting is one of the lines coming from one of the companies that has now taken this current action against the government because they invested in their building with the hope that it was going to be then taken on by the government and used to provide refugee accommodation is that they are now going to use the property for emergency homeless accommodation. The cycle continues.
Yeah, and it's not the only case. There's actually a few other cases we've been looking at where the exact same process. It's a very similar accommodation. It's a very similar model. It just shows how precarious the system is for those individuals.
And again, it goes back to that reliance on this private model that by all accounts can lead to huge amounts of profits being made and huge, huge amounts of money being swallowed up by the state when they ultimately end up with nothing permanent or tangible to show for it.
No, As you say, when the profit margins are so large, there was one particular company we looked at. Their profits shifted from around 50,000 to over 12 million in the space of 15 months once they entered a state contract. Other groups we've looked at, 15 companies within one group, they had profits of 6.5 million in 2020. That was up to 24 million 5 years later.
And there's eye-watering sums now.
There's a lot more examples, and then there's directors' payouts in the millions for some companies from virtually nothing 1 year and the next year because the profits are coming in, and I mean, they're going to make the payouts when they can. So it's a very strong industry now. And I think that's not, I wouldn't say, let's say the saddest part of it. That's the reality of it, that what was meant to be a temporary system has become a very profitable quasi-permanent or almost permanent system now.
So the thing that's supposed to look out for over the next 6 to 12 months is if there is evidence of people very successfully transitioning from the state-provided accommodation to independent housing.
Yeah,
and the impact that has on the market.
That's definitely one, because, and the government does have the figures of the individuals who'll be using that system as well. It's to see if there's a tapering off of the payments as well, especially for hotels, to know if it is really, really happening. And unfortunately, to keep an eye on the homeless figures as well.
Niall Sargent, great to have you back here in the podcast studio as always. And you can follow Niall's reporting at thecurrency.news. That was Tuesday's News Talk Daily. We'll be back with another edition tomorrow. Don't forget to follow or like the podcast on Apple, on Spotify or on Go Loud, so it's delivered to you bright and early every single day. Until tomorrow morning, goodbye.